Welcome to session number 265, Sexuality and Joseph Smith's Plurality, with Brian Hales. Dan called me 10 days or 2 weeks ago, said we had to fill some last-minute spots and could I chair a session or two to help fill out the program and ready to go to the printer. And I said, only if it's a session that I would be interested in. And he mentioned this session. I said, I'm always interested in anything having to do with sex. And so we welcome you here. And I can read better without my glasses in this light, I guess. Please be sure and turn off all noisy gongs and so forth that you might be carrying with you. In fact, we do have an invisible trap door under each seat and a den of hungry lions down below in case your cell phone does go off. During the question and answer period, we would like to be sure that you limit your question or comment to a minute or so, keep them brief. And use the microphone that we'll have up here for you. And so, because remember, it's important to get that on the tape. I'm one who buys a lot of Sunstone tapes, and it's frustrating because sometimes really good things come in the question and answer session, and it's really frustrating when you can't hear the question. All you can hear is the answer, and maybe you have to guess at what the question was about. So be sure and come forward to the mic when you want to have a question or comment afterward. Our speaker is Brian Hales. He is an active LDS member. He went on a mission to Venezuela some time ago. He got his medical degree, MD, at the University of Utah School of Medicine. He's on the staff at the Davis Hospital and Davis Surgical Center in Layton. And he published a book a couple years ago. We gave it the Best Book Award of the Year from the John Whitmer Historical Association, and I reviewed it for the journal. And it's a very interesting book, Modern Polygamy and Mormon Fundamentalism, The Generations After the Manifesto. And so having read his book and knowing the topic of this session, although Brian is an anesthesiologist, I'm sure you will not be put to sleep. So, Brian... wherever you want to present, that's fine. Oh, yeah, that's right. He sings in the Tabernacle Choir.
I'm not supposed to mention that part of it, I'll get in trouble. Yeah, good PR. Can you hear me back there? Is that okay? It doesn't sound really very loud.
Can you hear the back?
Oh, well, I'll just hold it.
There's a hand in the back they can hear.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to stand down here because I want to point to some items as we're going through the slideshow. And Bill, you can see that.
Yeah.
It is kind of warm. It hasn't been too long since we ate lunch. If you fall asleep, I won't feel bad, but I might send you a bill. So, I have a lot of people ask me why I'm interested in polygamy, and I have a sister who was excommunicated for joining the Allred Polygamy Group. This is back almost 20 years ago, and she's since left that group, but my response to it was to do some research, and as Bill mentioned, I've written a book here. This is the one he talked about that came out a couple of years ago, and John Whitmer Historical Society Association was kind enough to give me the award there, and Levina was the editor. Greg Coford was the publisher. Just a couple months ago, this one came out. It's a little less expensive paperback. You can even buy it at Deseret Book, but covering a lot of the same material. As people ask me about my book, so about half of the questions have to do with Joseph Smith's polygamy. And I've been having to tell them, I don't know. That book hasn't been written yet. And just not too long ago, I decided that maybe it's time to try and get a look at Joseph Smith's polygamy, and with the help of this guy right here on the right, that's Don Bradley, who's been a research assistant, and he presented here yesterday, did a great job, but he's been combing the archives, and I've been trying to put together some organization to everything, but we've been working on this for over a year. And the attempt is to identify every account, any substantial account that mentions Joseph's polygamy or sexuality, and get them within the covers of one book. And that's our goal, to get 90%. It wouldn't be realistic to try to get 100%, but to get 90%. is our goal. And like I say, it couldn't happen without Don and his excellent work. The nice thing about Don is that not only does he go and get the documents I'm asking for, but he's very self-directed. And he's finding all kinds of really good stuff. He's found some kind of exciting things that we'll be hearing about here in the next little while. But as I look at all of the data, it can be classified into five groups. There are non-specific allegations, like the one in the program that Joseph H. Jackson said that Joseph had seduced over 400 women. Well, what do you do with that? You look for 400 victims, and you can't find even one. So there's lots of those kind of allegations. Then there are more specific ones of sexuality with non-polyandrous plural wives. There's specific evidence with polyandrous wives. And then there's specific evidence non-wise. So we need to look at these, and we will. Then I also have a fifth category of failed proposals and attempted seduction. We'll briefly chat about those. They definitely deserve mention here. Looking at the non-specific allegations, I've charted these, and you're not supposed to be able to read this chart. Just so you know. But it goes on. These are all of the generalized allegations that Joseph Smith was sleeping with lots of women, or the Mormons in Nauvoo were having harems and brothels, or all kinds of crazy things. These really, they're actually kind of entertaining. And as we look through all the data, these come up all of the time. And the reason that we've categorized all of these is that we're hoping that, and what you've got here is this is the year of the publication, this is the author, this is the quotation that deals with the issue of sexuality and plurality, and then this is the rest of the reference. But as you look at all of these, what we're trying to find is maybe one of these authors, bless their hearts, actually went out and interviewed somebody who was in Nauvoo. But none of them did. They're just repeating anti-Mormon literature, and nothing in support of Mormon polygamy was published till 1852, and nothing was explanatory of Mormon polygamy with respect to history until 1887. So almost all of the published works were anti in their orientation. So there's not a lot of use here, but this is an entertaining photograph. A drawing that came out in 1851. It's quite early, 1851, in a book called The Mormons. It was an anonymous writer. We don't know who did the drawings. But as I'm going through all of these accounts, I keep running into the story that Joseph reviewed the Nauvoo Legion on a horse with six of his plural wives behind him on beautiful horses. And I'm going, where did this story come from? Because if you've studied Nauvoo polygamy, Joseph never publicly acknowledged even one plural wife ever. And I'm just trying to figure it out because it pops up just all over the grid. Well, I was looking at this picture just when I was putting this slideshow together. Count how many female heads on horses. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And I'm just sure that these great historians saw this drawing in this very early publication and just thought, oh, this must be historical fact. Let's write it just as if it occurred that way. And that's kind of the level of scholarship most of those that we saw in those earlier graphs have. Now, if we move on to the second category, specific evidence of sexuality with his plural wives, it doesn't surprise us that he is sexually involved with them, because one of the reasons for polygamy is to bring forth offspring. And I divided them into three groups, or four groups actually, those where there's probable evidence of sexuality. We have Fanny Alger, and these are the quotations that support it here. We're not reading this, of course, but I don't think Emma would have been ticked off about this if there hadn't been sexuality there. I think this is real good evidence. Louisa Beeman was the first seedling in Nauvoo, and there's good secondhand evidence that there was involvement there. Emily Dow Partridge was asked at the Temple Watt court case, did you ever have carnal intercourse with Joseph Smith? She answered, yes, sir. Her sister, we have good secondhand evidence for her. Almira, good secondhand evidence from Benjamin F. Johnson. Her brother, Benjamin's usually reliable for most things, he seems to be. Lucy Walker was asked, did you live with Joseph Smith as his wife? She replied, he was my husband, sir. And if you ever get a chance to read the Temple Lot case, her testimony and Joseph B. Noble's are very entertaining. They are going head-to-head with E.L. Kelly and P.P. Kelly of the ROVS Church, who are attorneys, and they're pretty aggressive, and they're not giving the answers. Lucy and Joseph Noble are not giving the answers that the attorneys want, and there's some rather entertaining exchanges there. Somebody needs to do a book on that. Melissa Lott was asked, was you a wife in very deed? And she answered, yes. Now, this quotation is cited fairly often. It's also misquoted. This is very important. It's also attributed to Zina Huntington. She never said it, so far as there's any evidence. Okay, it was Melissa here in this setting, and Zina did not say that she was his wife in very deed that we've been able to find, and we've looked really hard. But if you've got the quote, bring it forth, okay? We don't claim to have all of the evidence, but we looked real hard. She was also asked, did you ever room with Joseph Smith as his wife? She said, yes, sir. Sylvia Sessions is the eighth of the group. She told her daughter Josephine in 1882 that Josephine was Joseph's daughter. And we're going to come back and talk to her, but she's a very important player in this whole issue of Joseph Smith's sexuality. Now, looking quickly at my list of seven possible, now
could you just go through the dates of those persons when they occurred?
When the sealings occurred?
When the relationship occurred. I mean, when did Fanny out?
Oh, okay. All of the ones that we talked about were Nauvoo except for Fanny Alger. She was Kirtland, I believe, late 835, early 36, and the others were all in Nauvoo. Our reconstruction is there was one plural marriage in Ohio, Joseph and Fanny Alger, none others. Now, that's going to be disputed because that's not the tradition, but I think the evidence is very good to support that. Looking at possible sexuality with Joseph's plural wives, Eliza R. Snow, she was originally on my probable, but I've moved her to possible due to this letter right up here. She wrote to an RLDS missionary, Munns, in 1877, saying, you ask if I was a spiritual wife, I certainly shall not acknowledge myself as having been a carnal one. I am personally and intimately acquainted with several ladies now living in Utah who accept the pure and sacred doctrine of plural marriage and were bona fide wives to President Joseph Smith. Here she's, I think, implying very strongly that she was not a bona fide wife. Now, she may have been. And we've got all of these other accounts, none of them very reliable. And you've got the amalgamation and Von Brody, who immortalized it, bless her heart, into historical fact in the eyes of many. But I'm not sure she belongs on the list. And so she's on the probable list. But Sarah Ann Whitney is skipping through these. Laura Ann Woodworth is on the probable list. Hannah Ells, Maria Lawrence, Sarah Lawrence, Olive Frost. Olive Frost, according to one single account, this is the only one, so we wish we had more than one, but reportedly she had a child, and they both died before they left Nauvoo. I think it was 1846. So that's a second offspring of Joseph Smith, and there's probably a third out there, according to Mary Elizabeth Rollins Leitner, but we don't know who that is, or at least I don't, and if you do, let me know. We'd love to hear about it, but we haven't been able to find them. In review, I believe that specific evidence for non-polyamorous plural wives, there's 8, it's probable, 7 is possible, 2 is non-existent, and these are the 14-year-olds. I'm going to talk about that in a minute, and then for 4 of them, we don't know. Now looking at the specific evidence of sexual relations with polyamorous plural wives, these are a very important group because sexual polyandry is not part of the restored gospel. Joseph Smith never talked about it, never taught anything regarding it. But there are several quotes out there that we commonly see cited. One is attributed to Zina Huntington, where she allegedly said, the greatest trial I ever endured in my life was living with my husband and deceiving him by receiving Joseph's attention whenever he chose to come to me. This is from Ann Eliza Webb Young. She wrote Wife 19, a very anti-Mormon-oriented document. The problem with Ann Eliza Webb is this is a very unlikely statement. The likelihood that Zina would talk about her sexuality or refer to it in this way is small. That she would refer to polyandrous sexuality is even smaller. But Zina herself made this comment in 1887. She was not truthful, talking about Ann Eliza's claims. She has convicted herself out of her own mouth. Ann Eliza knew she was misrepresenting the facts. A second common quotation is Presidia Huntington saying, I heard Presidia say afterwards in Utah that she did not know whether Mr. Buell or the prophet was the father of her son. Again, I just think on a plausibility scale, statements like this are in the negative category. There are other problems as well, and we won't go over them. The witness on that was... Sir?
We're trying to understand the difference between your two categories.
okay, there's sexuality with non-polyandrous wives and sexuality with polyandrous wives. Polyandry is a wife who's legally married to one husband and religiously married to Joseph. Right. But sexual polyandry is not part of the gospel. But anyway, the source on the Presidia citation was that her accounts are inaccurate and of no value. And there's other problems with that citation as well. And did I answer that question okay on the polyandry? I know we don't take questions usually during the presentation, but that's
saying,
okay.
So are you saying that he probably had sexual relationship with them, or are they divided into the polyandry category? That's, I guess, where I'm...
Looking at his plural wives who were not married to other men, the non-polyandrous men, these are the ones where there was sexuality, I believe. 8, it was probable. 7, it was possible. 2, it did not exist because they were immature age-wise. And 4, we just have no evidence. Okay. Now we're moving on to the polyandrous wives. And I'm sorry, that's a term that may not be familiar to everybody. But these are women who are already legally married to other men that are sealed to Joseph. And the question is, well, is Joseph sleeping with these women or not? And we talked about these common quotations. I just think they're not real reliable. The third one is Lucinda Pendleton Morgan Harris said, allegedly, "Why, I have been his mistress since 4 years," and this was reportedly in 1842, came from Sarah Pratt, an avid anti-Mormon. Again, on the plausibility scale, I think it's problematic. All of these come from avid anti-Mormons. They're late, secondhand. I think they failed at the test of plausibility. Importantly, though, sexual polyandry is not only it's non-doctrinal, but it's also anti-doctrinal. And Brigham Young made this statement. He said, "What do you think of a woman having more husbands than one? This is not known to the law." And I submit that even if Joseph Smith, this applies to Joseph Smith too, that if he were husband number two, he'd be outside the law. I just don't believe from a practical standpoint or sexual standpoint it ever existed. And we'll talk about why there. But George Buchanan said that a plurality of husbands is wrong. Orson Pratt, that God has strictly forbidden in this Bible plurality of husbands and proclaimed against it in his law. I also submit that legal husbands would not have acquiesced and that the female church members would not have acquiesced to a sexual polyandrous situation either. If you want more details on this, I'm going to present this up at John Whitmer in Boree, Wisconsin next month. So come on up and you'll get the details, okay? Todd Compton has looked at all the evidence. He identifies 11 plural polyandrous wives, but he admits that in 10 cases of the polyandry, there is no evidence of sexuality. In fact, that's not true. There is evidence, it's just not credible. It's just not very believable, plausible. He says in only one case do we have evidence, credible evidence, and that is the case of Sylvia Sessions, who we referred to earlier. I believe she was the mother of Joseph Smith's daughter, Josephine Lyon. The question is, was Sylvia a polyandrous wife or just a plural wife of Joseph Smith? Windsor Lyon married Sylvia in 1838. Windsor was excommunicated in November of 1842. And with that excommunication came the church divorce. So the question is, was Joseph Smith sealed to Sylvia before or after November of 1842? Todd Compton states that it was on February 8, 1842 that a sealing occurred, and he gets his data from this. This is one of the pages from Joseph F. Smith's 1869 affidavit book used by permission here. But in it shows the 8th day of February, 1842. In the same collection is another affidavit, and there were two sets of affidavits. They were equal affidavits, and it has 1843. But the important point is that these are not signed. An unsigned affidavit is only slightly better than no affidavit at all. And it's just a scrap of paper with writing on it. We don't know how what's written here relates to the beliefs of the scribe or the intended signatory. And I submit that we really just have no information as far as the dating from these affidavits. And therefore, we have to go to other sources. In 1887, Andrew Jensen wrote that Sylvia Sessions became a convert to Mormonism and was married to Mr. Lyons. When he left the church, she was sealed to the prophet Joseph Smith. And in 1915, Josephine recalled that in 1882, her mother had told her that Sylvia had been sealed to the prophet at the time that her husband, Mr. Lyon, was out of fellowship with the church. So we've got two sources placing it after November of 1842. Josephine was conceived somewhere around May of 1843. So the timeline works out. Here we go. We have Windsor marrying Sylvia in 1838. They have three children. These two die right at birth. This one lives a year. Windsor's excommunicated. Sometime after that point, Sylvia is sealed to Joseph. One child is conceived while Windsor's out of the church, and that's Josephine. And then Joseph dies, Windsor is rebaptized, the couple reunites and has two more children. And there's other evidences to support that this timeline really is accurate, or at least as accurate as we can get at this point. My conclusion is that the Joseph Smith Sylvia Sessions plural sealing was not polyandrous. It should not be generalized to the other 10 polyandrous unions, wherein there is no evidence, according to Todd Compton, of sexuality. And this is very important. In fact, when Joseph Smith restored the New and Everlasting Covenant of Marriage, what we find is that there were three types of marriage sealings going on in Nauvoo: time only, time and eternity, and eternity only. And it's curious because some writers are very careful to say that, yeah, some of Joseph's 33 sealings were time only or time and eternity, but they absolutely refuse to suggest that any of them were eternity only, even though we really have this, the evidence is the same for all three. There's only one of the ceremonies where we know exactly what was said. This is important because Joseph Smith did propose some eternity-only sealings that were turned down, and these were sometimes interpreted by the women as attempted seductions. To Nancy Rigdon, he probably proposed time and eternity, but later it was claimed that Joseph Smith tried to seduce her. Sarah Pratt said that Joseph tried to seduce her, or made an indecent proposal to her. Jane Ma, it was said by her husband that Joseph tried to seduce her. And then Artie Foster's wife made the same claim. The important thing on looking at these is that there's no allegations of successful seductions. We do not have a single account from a woman saying Joseph seduced me or anything close to it. There are no accounts of women saying, well, he actually just said, let's have this quick little prayer here, we'll be married, and then let's jump into bed. There's nothing like that out there from any of the women that were involved with Joseph Smith, or even in the allegations against him. We're going to look at those here in a minute. In fact, we're going to look at it right now. As I've gone through all of the evidences, I've been able to identify 21 specific evidences of immoral relations with non-wives. This is where Joseph is accused of sleeping with somebody he's not married to. And there are 21 of them. The first one was with the Broome County prosecutor. And he called Joseph up and got witnesses from two daughters of Josiah Stoll. And it was a fishing expedition. They had no evidence on him at all. The second one, E.D. Howe probably published the first anti-Mormon book in 1834, and there was a third-hand account accusing Joseph of attempting to seduce Eliza Winters. Eliza Winters had two great opportunities to repeat this herself later on in life, and she didn't do it on either account. Dan Vogel has said that in 1880 she was approached by a newspaper man named Mathers, and neither confirmed or denied it. That really is going beyond the evidence. We don't know if the topic ever came up, and you can bet that if she had denied it in that setting, Mathers would not have repeated it. Mathers was looking for dirt on the Smiths and Joseph, and would not have written anything to support it. So Benjamin Winchester was excommunicated in 1842. He was a real maverick, but he also accused Joseph of impregnating a woman named Miss Smith, who was Hannah DeVos Smith Dibble, and Joseph denied it flat out in some of the minutes from the Quorum of the Twelve in Nauvoo that we have, but if you line up the chronology of the birth of the child and everything, he wasn't there. He couldn't have been in Nauvoo and in Philadelphia at the same time, so it just doesn't check out. Four of the allegations come from John Bennett. John Bennett, in a letter to the Sangamo Journal, said that he saw Joseph in bed with a Mrs. Fuller. But when Bennett comes out in November of 1842 with his book, History of the Saints, he doesn't have it in there. And you can just bet if he really had seen Joseph doing this thing, he would have not only mentioned it, he would have highlighted it or made a real big deal out of it. And this is the kind of stuff that Bennett came up with. Anybody who thinks Bennett was a polygamy insider in Nauvoo, I beg to differ. I think if you look closely at the evidence, he was a womanizer before he got there, and he kept doing it. And in a parallel course, Joseph was restoring polygamy, and there the two ever met. And we can talk about that if you're interested more in it. But he has some very brazen adultery by Joseph from a few people here that are not the best witnesses. Again, none of these I think are very credible, but they're all included in the book that I'm working on, and that you can make your own decisions. The most puzzling one of the 21 is Joseph E. Johnson. In 1850, he was put on trial for his membership for adultery. He had committed adultery with the plural wife of Lorenzo Snow. And in his defense, he said, well, Joseph had sex with Mary Hare. And she was married at the time to John Snyder. And we have looked very hard to try to connect Joseph and Mary Hare in any other setting at all. Can't do it. And the allegation is a single one, but Joseph E. Johnson was an active member. He's the only non-anti-Mormon out of the 21 allegations. And so it's a real puzzler. If you have information on this, we'd love to hear about it. John Snyder, her husband, stayed active in the church, as did Joseph E. Johnson eventually, was reinstated. So we end up with at least the closest participants not being bothered by whatever had happened there, but we really are hopeful to find more information. William Hall, not very reliable, said Jane Law, that Joseph had sex involved with Jane Law. Jane Law's husband and son said no, he wasn't. Clark Reagan was a Church of Christ minister in 1884, had a whole list of allegations. Some of them have stuck. This one of Miranda Hyde in 1832, you hear a lot about. Again, it doesn't line up. The darkest of the 21 is that Joseph was involved with his stepdaughter, Julia. And we can prove at least half of the allegation is just flatly incorrect, and there's just no evidence for the other one. A girl named Knight from somebody named Hansbury and Morton, these are names we can't find anywhere in the early church. Just lots of problems with Braden's claims. And the biggest his anti-Mormon writer, at least of his era, was Wilhelm Will. Very entertaining. He talked about a Miss Edward Blossom in a very implausible tale that with names that don't line up. It's a third-hand account of Mrs. Ford. Anyway, as you look at these individually, they don't impress you too awfully much. But I'm including all the accounts and some analysis in our workup. Nancy Alexander, maybe in 1886, not sure of the date, but she claimed that Vienna Jakes was involved with Joseph in a polygamous relationship or adulterous relationship, probably in 1833. But as you line up the chronology and the geography, again, it just doesn't fit. There's just all kinds of problems. William Bond came up with a really late allegation that doesn't line up chronologically, or St. Joseph was involved in Pennsylvania. This one's in Pennsylvania, Erie County. Again, problems, lots of them. Richard Van Wagner said there was a link between Joseph Smith and Athalia Rigdon. And yet, when you look at the evidence, I just don't know what he's referring to. There's just nothing in the noted reference, which takes us back to the Braden-Kelly debate. There's just nothing there to support a link. But he lists it, so I put it here for completeness. I believe that if we took all of this evidence and submitted it to an unbiased district attorney, he or she would not want to present any of it to a judge. And if you did present it, there would be no convictions. It's just when you look at each one, there's just nothing compelling there. To my mind, I'm biased. I'm a believer. And I'm happy to have other people try to defend these allegations. But most of them come from avid anti-Mormons, and there's just lots of problems with everyone. I want to say just something about conjugal relations with 14-year-olds. We have no evidence about his relationship with Nancy Winchester, but Helen Marr Kimball was sealed to Joseph when she was 14. It was initiated not by Joseph Smith. There's no evidence that Joseph initiated. It was Helen's father. Now, he might have. We don't know. But the evidence does not support that. I think that's important. But Heber C. Kimball wanted Helen to be sealed to Joseph and initiated it when she was very young. She wrote a poem in 1881, and she was rebelling, but not against a physical relationship with the prophet, because that isn't alluded to at any level. She rebels against her inability to socialize with her friends. And I agree with Stanley B. Kimball, who said that in 1881 in Utah, Helen wrote a retrospective poem about this marriage, from which we learned that it was for eternity alone and that it was unconsummated. In Utah, there was a policy that you don't get sexually involved with these young wives until they are mature. I believe that policy began in Utah. Brigham Young taught, it is your privilege to take more wives, but set a good example to the people and leave the children long enough with their parents to get their growth, strength, and maturity. He said, I do not want children to be married to men before the age with their mothers. Mothers can generally best determine. Go ahead and marry them, but leave the children to grow. And I believe this is a contrast to some groups today that are marrying and having children by 14-year-olds. I don't think Brigham Young or Joseph Smith would have approved of that behavior. If we look at all of the different lists of Joseph's plural wives that we can identify in the historical literature, John C. Bennett listed 7. 5 of them were correct. 2 were wrong. Joseph H. Jackson in 1844 listed 3 mothers in Israel, and most of us believe they were probably sealed to the prophet. There were Nauvoo Temple sealings, 29. Some of these women were sealed to the prophet while he was alive. In 1869, Joseph F. Smith rounded up 15 affidavits from plural wives, and then 3 more showed up a little later. George A. Smith used some of these in a letter to Joseph Smith III, talking about 9 of Joseph's plural wives. Andrew Jensen put together a list of 27 in 1887. Orson F. Whitney, the following year, mentioned 9 more. Benjamin F. Johnson referred to 12 in 1896. In 1899, Lorenzo Snow authorized the plural marriages of 11, proxy plural marriages of 11 women. And then the first list that tried to be comprehensive, the first was in 1950s with Stan Ivins, who was arguably the best researcher with respect to Mormon polygamy that we've ever had. Maybe not Bradley's better, but Stan Ivins really did an amazing amount of work. But he had a list of 50 and then added 34 more that were clearly sealed after Joseph's death by proxy. Brody had a list of 48, but 2 were redundant. And Bachman, in his dissertation, used that same list. Quinn and Michael Quinn had 46. Todd Compton had the best documented list with 33. And I think he did a top-notch job. Our research has had lists from 29 up to 34. And we're parked right back on the same list of 33 that Todd had. And he did an exceptional job, I think. Lyndon Cook listed 37. Gary Verjura, 36. Michael Marquardt, 27. Lyle Brown, 42. George D. Smith, still waiting on that one. But I expect there'll be some good information there. And then we're back at 33 in our research. But the thing that I have done is that I believe that we can confidently state that some of these were for time only, some were time and eternity, and some of them were eternity only. And I believe that 3 of them were time only, 2 of the widows and Fanny Alger. Time and eternity were 18, but 2 of those would not have included sexuality because the children or the women were not yet mature. And then I believe the 10 polyandrous marriages were eternity only, and then 2 of the others were Fanny Young, and I think it was Rhoda Richards. So I'm breaking down Todd Compton's list a little bit more. One very interesting observation as we look at this list of 33, if we look at where these women died, this is a list of how long they lived, but there's 33 women here. 23 of them die in Utah, involved with the church. 3 of them died before they got out of Illinois, also still believing in the church. And then there's 7 that geographically removed themselves from the church in Utah. If we look at these 7, Lucinda Pendleton, nothing is really known about her status with the church at the time of her death. Todd Compton says she joined a Catholic church and became a nun. Better evidence that has been uncovered suggests she died in 1856 at the home of her daughter. She did leave her husband and was geographically, of course, distanced from the church, but exactly what her feelings were, we don't know. Agnes Coolbrith went to California, and she was very friendly to the church. She wasn't what you'd call active, but when RLDS missionaries David and Alexander Smith came to California, she told them that Joseph was, their father, Joseph Smith, was a polygamist, and he reported, there's a second-hand report, that the sons were somewhat shaken by that admission from Agnes, who was personally involved. Flora Woodworth married a non-member, but held to her beliefs. Fanny Alger, kind of an outlier, because she was the only Kirkland plural wife, but she united with the Universalist. Elizabeth Davis joined the RLDS Church late in life, which was curious, and has caused some to say that she shouldn't even be on the list, because the RLDS Church at this point was very anti-polygamy. Sarah Kingsley followed the saints partway west, but then was advised to go back to her good non-LDS husband, and late in life she was baptized into a revivalist group. Hard to interpret this. There were no LDS churches around. If she wanted any kind of religious experience, that was the only choice she really had. The only one of the 33 wives to rebel against Joseph Smith in any degree was Sarah Lawrence. She became antagonistic and denied any relationship with him. But what's interesting is in looking at these 33 women, none of them ever accused him of any deception or abuse. Anybody who wants to describe Joseph Smith as a womanizer or as a licentious person, you know, a libertine, really has to deal with this, I think, because these are the women that knew Joseph Smith the very best. And they later went on and remarried most of them. They had sexual experiences in their marriages. They matured. They were able to look back at their interaction with Joseph and say, he abused me or he deceived me. None of them did that. That might be significant. I believe that the best evidence supports that Joseph Smith did not have sexual relations with other men's wives, with dozens of wives, probable with at least eight, and beyond that, not sure, with non-wives, nor did he have with 14-year-olds. For me, Joseph Smith was a prophet, a restorer, and a pluralist. For me, the scary thing about Joseph Smith's polygamy is not Joseph Smith. It is not his behaviors and practices. The scary thing about Joseph Smith's polygamy is
thank you, Brian. You can respond to the questions up here or down there, whichever you prefer, but be sure to come up to the mic. Maybe put the mic more in the center. Yeah, something, that's fine. Let me take the prerogative of the chair to ask the first question. A skeptic might look at some of your evidence here and say, well, Fanny Alger, there's no ceiling. Maybe that's just adultery. And the 10 polyandrous wives, true, there'd be no basis in the law, of course, for polyandry. And it's a very patriarchal society. And as far as evidence of sexuality, excuse me, why would these women who were married to another man say anything to admit that they had sex with Joseph? So that'd be my opening question. And then others, come on up to the mic and get your question on the mic.
You're pointing out some excellent questions, Bill, because a lot of what I've told you here goes completely against the grain of the tradition, of the traditional interpretation of Joseph Smith's sexuality and polygamy. And the answers to your question are not easily given in this setting, but I think what we have presented, what I presented, is accurate. With respect to Fanny Alger, we've actually got some new evidence that we haven't presented yet that further, I think, establishes the likelihood that it was a marriage. We do have a very late account that a marriage ceremony was performed. I'm sure you're aware of that. It's from Mosiah Hancock quoting his father, Levi. I believe it's accurate. But in my book, I have a chart wherein there's the evidence in favor of the Fanny Alger relationship being adultery, of it there being no relationship. There's actually some historians who think there was nothing physical there at all. I don't know how they do that. But there's also a column identifying the evidence that it was a marriage. And to me, but I am biased, I readily admit that, but I just think the best evidence shows that there was a marriage there, even though it wasn't a sealing as we later knew it. It was a ceremony performed by Levi Hancock, and that made it a marriage. Joseph was never accused of polygamy in the 1830s. This is another misunderstanding. There's no allegations that I can find anywhere of anybody accusing Joseph Smith of polygamy in the 1830s. In Ohio, in Missouri, nothing. There were allegations of adultery in conjunction with Fanny Alger, and Joseph just said, look, I didn't commit adultery with Fanny Alger, because he believed it was a marriage. That's my take on that. The polyandrous question is a little bit more complex. We first established that there really is no good evidence of sexuality being there. And then we do have some statements from the women themselves saying that it was for eternity only. And we know that it turns Joseph into a huge hypocrite if he's involved sexually with these women. And so it takes it the skeptic is going to say that, sure, that's what he's doing. He's just, it's adultery or it's whatever you want to call it. But if you put it within the context, I think that there were eternity-only marriages there. The women, some of them, did indicate that that was what was happening. Mary Elizabeth Rollins Leitner was asked about it, and she says, I did just what Joseph told me to do, and that there are some things I could tell you about it, and you would be perfectly satisfied. Well, John R. Young, who the letter was written to, wouldn't have been perfectly satisfied if Mary Elizabeth Rollins Leitner would have said, I was sleeping with both husbands. He wouldn't have been happy with that at all. That he would have interpreted that as straightforward adultery. So the only conclusion really that I can draw, but it's circumstantial. It's not as good as we like. But there's quite a list, and we've got all of this in the manuscript, and people will be able to make their own decisions.
Okay, go ahead.
think it was in the book about David Smith. Was that the one from the RLDS Church that came to Utah?
And, it was his son.
Yeah, and he talked to Eliza R. Snow, and from what I remember, he suggested that she had a spiritual or a, you know, fraternity only marriage, non-sexual marriage, and supposedly she said to him, obviously you didn't know your father, which would indicate that it was consummated.
Yeah, and that quotation is why she was in the probable group initially. It's third hand and it's a late quotation, and then we had the first hand where she's, I think, clearly denying being a bona fide wife, but maybe she belongs in the probable group. I really think possible is better, but that's a good point. And that quotation actually was in that graph, but unless you had binoculars or something, you wouldn't have been able to see it, but it was up there. So
it implies that in the martyrdom, regarding the martyrdom of the prophet, how many of these relationships will have an impact on that martyrdom? I think probably William Law's wife was one of them. Were there others? Or was he? Was that part?
I think polygamy played a huge role in the martyrdom, and it was William Law and Jane entertained the possibility of William entering into polygamy. If you read William Law's journal or a diary, there is an entry there that indicates that he entertained the possibility, don't know how long, don't know how seriously, and then he rejected it and labeled it as adultery. And then he, being a much more sophisticated enemy than John C. Bennett, he went to the court in Carthage and swore out a warrant or an affidavit against Joseph claiming that he had committed adultery with Maria Lawrence. And so he was going to let the law just bring down everything in that fashion. With respect to Joseph's relationship with Jane Law, there is evidence to support five different interpretations. That Joseph wanted to sleep with her outright, that Joseph proposed a plural eternity-only ceiling, that she came to Joseph and proposed an eternity-only ceiling, that Joseph and Emma wanted to have a wife swap between Jane and Emma because Emma liked William Law, and then there's a fifth one that I'm blocking on. But there's evidence to support all of these. And I've just outlined it, and take your pick. You know, that it's not conclusive.
I'm afraid these are all going to be rhetorical questions, so I'll just list off three or four of them, and you can answer if you feel like. I was a little bit late, so I missed whether you actually defined what sex was, whether sex would be any, if somebody's married, you're kissing some other person, or an oral sex, or I don't know what the gamut of what you define as sex and non-sex.
Yeah, can you answer that and be very particular and specific?
The second one is, I'm not sure exactly what part of now is not part of eternity. So the three or four definitions of eternal, blah, 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 it just made my head spin. I couldn't figure that one out. And also you seem to be, when you talk about someone being an anti, that anyone that's anti is not able to state facts true, honest, or objectively. As soon as you label them an anti, you can dismiss anything they've said. That's just my impression, and if you don't want to really get that impression, you should be a little more careful about how you state the sources and labeling them as anti, therefore they can be discounted. And the last one, according to all extant records, I'm still a virgin. I have absolutely, there's no records in any journal that I've ever had sex with anyone. The five children that I've had are probably from a different man, because there's not in the journal of my wife or myself, is there any record saying that we had sex together. And the point of that is, I don't think people, if someone's married to someone else, like Mary Elizabeth Rollins, who's a relative of mine, she's not going to leave behind for her children and her posterity a smoking gun saying, I was sexually involved with Joseph Smith, and every other night I was sexually involved with your dad. I just don't think it's practical. That those kind of smoking, if you're looking at that smoking gun, it was never written down, and if it was ever written down, it was used for kindling across the plains.
Okay, wait, don't go away, because we got to remember these four. Okay, the first one was definition of sex. That would be, and remember, I'm a doctor, so I can talk anatomy and physiology all you want. Actually, it would be any relationship that could result in pregnancy. would be the definition for them, because that was the point of plurality of wives in that era. It was to have offspring,
right?
And so that's all
that
we
know. So with everyone that he married. If the point is to have offspring.
If the point is, yeah, but unless they're too young.
Section 132. If you're a believer, the point of Section 132 says you should be having. Well, and have procreation to have children.
That was the purpose of it. But remember, Joseph had problems timing with them. But most of the time in eternity, marriages allowed for sex or time only would have allowed for it. What I'm saying is, what is the evidence that it existed in those? Because if the woman would have said, no, you know, I just want to be sealed to you for eternity, I think Joseph would have respected that. We have evidence that occurred.
Will, after I'm dead, sell me to Joseph. Makes sense.
Well, there were eternity-only sealings in Nauvoo during Joseph's lifetime. In fact, when Joseph started to teach about the eternity aspect of marriage, some of the women were thinking, I don't really want to be sealed to my very active husband. I'd rather be sealed to Joseph Smith. And he was happy with that. He was okay with that. And I think that's how some of the polyandrous marriages came about. We have evidence with the Ruth Vos Sayers that that's exactly what happened. So let's see. We kind of hit on the last question.
The first eternity is not now. I still don't get the idea of how you can turn around and if you're sealed for eternity, but you're not sealed for now. Because now, is, to my definition, is part of eternity.
Right. The eternity-only sealings are not performed. No, it's a very important distinction you're bringing up. There's time only, which we understand. That just ends with this. There's time and eternity, which would allow for conjugal relations now and a sealing in eternity. One form of this marriage, John Witzel talks about this briefly, that they allowed then, and just in a... probably just a few dozen cases, if that, were eternity only, where you'd be civilly married to somebody now, and this new covenant comes in, so we're going to let you stay with him now, but in eternity, you're going to be with somebody else. And it sounds crazy to us, but it did happen. There's good evidence that is exactly what was going on, and so that's the three different types of marriages.
As far as labeling people anti and discounting...
Yeah, if I've done that to the degree that you've recounted, I'm embarrassed, because you're exactly right. Just because somebody's an anti-Mormon or an apologist, which I've been labeled, doesn't mean that what they're saying can't be true. And that's but when you read what they've said and then compare it to some contemporary, well, more people who were there, you come away thinking these guys just have an agenda and they're not really too worried about documenting it. And you really would have to just look at what they're saying in the other documents.
Right in some cases and often right in the majority of them.
Oh, yeah. The anti-Mormon could be very accurate. We quote them all throughout the book, the anti-Mormons. And sometimes because we think they are accurate, we just that amount of bias would be a problem in gaining accuracy. Just like the apologist is so biased, you have to be careful what he or she is saying as well. Yeah.
Good point. That someone would have left behind, especially someone that was married to more than one person, would have left behind a smoking gun. You say the fact that we didn't find a smoking gun indicates that there never was one. Yeah, it's implied, but I don't know.
Yeah,
that.
You can't prove a negative. We all know that. The absence of any evidence of sexuality in those 10 marriages does not mean there wasn't any. When you put it into context with all of the other evidences, I submit the best evidence is these were just eternity-only marriages. And the skeptic is not going to want to grab onto that, because the idea of Joseph sleeping with some other man's wife is just too great. You know, that's really tantalizing. And let's get out the anti-Mormon press. In this case, I mean anti-Mormon press, because, you know, this is why Todd Compton's book was so popular with the anti-Mormons. You know, some will say, well, it was just the data. No, it's his interpretation of the sexuality of Joseph that made his book so popular with the skeptics.
Sorry, I was confrontational. Thank you very much for very respectfully answering.
Those are very good questions. Thank you.
Yeah, next person.
Yeah, great presentation. I have two questions. One is that you just talked about Compton's book, which takes one angle. Could you describe your angle in contrast to Compton's angle? What are you trying to tell us that Compton hasn't told us, or in addition to Compton? And then the second one is, could you go through Joseph Smith's other proposals to wives that were rejected?
Okay. With respect to Todd Compton's book, I think he did a fabulous job identifying the wives, and the historical accounts are very, very good. I just have this different spin when it comes to the sexuality issues. I think he speculated on some polyandrous sexuality issues that are not justified, and I think the timing of the Sylvia Sessions Lyon plural marriage, I think, is very problematic. But Todd admitted in his book, and it's one that I've read at least half a dozen times in great detail. It's been kind of the number one source for us to spring from. And in our book that'll come out, I'm sure there'll be people writing after that, and they can take our evidence and move forward. It certainly won't be the last word. But I do have a different feel with respect to Joseph Smith's sexuality in the marriages, and it was just a sideline for Todd. You can't talk about Joseph Smith's plural wives without dealing with it, but I think that's where he and I probably see differently. And frankly, Todd's been really helpful and kind. I'm in communication with him. He's been willing to look at some of the evidence here. He's working on another project, he admits. He doesn't have a lot of time, but he's been encouraging to, you know, let's go to the next level, and hopefully I'll do the same when my book comes out to those that are researching it as well. And the other question was?
Rejected proposals.
Oh, the rejected proposals. They fall into several different categories. We've got Valette Kimball and Leonora Taylor, who Joseph told their husbands, I want your wife, and then when they finally relented, he sealed them together. Didn't want their wives, really, in any sense. That's one category. And then we have what I see as just a discussion about an eternity-only marriage, which was interpreted as an attempted seduction. Now, keep in mind, Joseph was a pretty robust guy. If he'd wanted to force himself on a woman, he could have prevailed in almost every sense. And no one ever says that he's doing anything like this. It's all discussion that's interpreted as an attempted seduction. There's no real good evidence that he was putting their arms around them or trying to kiss them or any of this kind of stuff. It's just not there. Bennett makes a couple of allegations that I dispute because that's how he approached it. But beyond those two that I'm aware of, nobody's saying that this even happened until after they were married. There was physical affection and never before. The third, there are three groups. Well, you'll have to read my book for the third one. I'm blocking on it. But
you're a medical doctor, are you?
Yeah.
Is there any way you can use DNA to map progeny in generations later?
Excellent question. I wish Hugo Perrigo was here. How many of you have heard him speak on this? Any of you? I mean, he's fantastic, and he's got the goods that really it seems to be quite reliable. Unfortunately, most of his work is with the Y chromosome, meaning you've got to be dealing with males. And, you know, I have the same Y chromosome as my great-great-great-grandfather, almost. I mean, there's some little subtleties in the mutation rate. But when it comes to the women, you have to go to the mitochondrial DNA because that's what's passed on. And they're working on that. He said he'd like to take a shot at Josephine, her posterity, to see if it mapped out somehow. But last time I talked with him, which was back at John Whitmer last year, it was a little ways off. But, you know, he's done some really good work with that. And anyway, by the way, there's a lot of allegations of children by Joseph Smith, and he has proven at least five of them could not have been. And these are some of the more popular ones, Oliver Buell and a few like that.
Mark, I think Mark
is
a first, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
Brian, help me understand the panning out of circumstances again, and why you reject the idea, or why you are willing to say that was a marriage. Then I'd like to follow up.
I've got a chart. This is my manuscript, and I just have a chart in here, and I can just go through it rather quickly. If you look at all of the accounts, there's 19 accounts that we've found with respect to Fanny Alger that mention it in some form. And I've charted all of these as whether they support a marriage, whether they support an adulterous relationship. Supporting the marriage side of it, you've got Mosiah Hancock's statement, and it's not perfect. You've got a statement from Chauncey Webb, Eliza Jane Churchill Webb, Ann Eliza Webb, the Webb Family Actions, the Alger Family Actions, a John Hawley statement, Benjamin F. Johnson statement, Andrew Jensen has some really interesting things, and then just some of Joseph Smith's teachings. These would all support a marriage. But on the other side of the coin, it's clear that Oliver Cowdery thought it was adultery. Emma thought it was adultery. There's Fanny Brewer and many other statements accusing Joseph of adultery during this period of time. There's a statement from William McClellan, Clark Braden, and a guy named Historicus. And this is a new one nobody's ever quoted that Don dug up. It's kind of fun. And these all would support an adulterous relationship.
So the timing of these statements really, were they informing to you? Were they... influential on how does that, because if you say that the Levi Hancock, Mosiah Hancock, was that was what, 50 years after
more Yeah, it was 1899.
Because of the timing.
And well, you don't reject or accept, and if I label them anti-Mormon, don't, you know, that would be wrong too. You just have to weigh it, and that's why I've got this chart here with all of the stuff, and the reader will just get to make their choice. I'm a believer, and that biases me. You know, I'm kind of, I believe he wouldn't have done it. That there is evidence that it was adultery, and so you just get to make your own judgment. Yeah.
I have two questions. One is, you list the 21 basically allegations that he was involved with in non-marital sexual behavior. And I guess my question is, why did they stir around Joseph Smith and his sexuality even at the time? Like, was there something that created this? Were there lots of allegations with lots of men at the time, or was he sort of singled out? Secondly, one wife we haven't talked much about is Emma. And what evidence do you have, maybe you haven't addressed this at all, that she knew about one or any of the 33 and any of her feelings that you might?
Excellent question. You know, one of the things that will be a surprise to individuals is that there's no evidence that Joseph was accused of being a licentious person prior to July of 42. All of the allegations, those 21 that I listed up there, with the exception of 1834, E.D. Howe, every one of them came after July of 1842. When Joseph arrived in Nauvoo, nobody was whispering, you know, he had adultery, you know, because he denied that. It was behind him. Those that believed it apostatized, and the rest didn't believe it. Joseph moves on. So he didn't have this Fawn Brody, you know, reputation of being a womanizer throughout the 1830s in Missouri and in Ohio. This came later. This is retrospective. People looking back saying, Joseph was a polygamist in 42. He must have been doing some of this later. And, oh, yeah, here's evidence and here's some more evidence. But if you look to the newspapers of the period, no one mentions polygamy or adultery until 1842. That's a rather significant change in the paradigm of what we think of Joseph Smith's relationship with women during the 1830s. With respect to Emma, what a tough role she had. You know, I feel bad for her. It's pretty stupid, huh? That I would get emotional. But I really do. I feel awful for her. I don't think she knew what was going on until 1843, probably May. In 1842, Joseph was marrying polygamously secretly, but John C. Bennett was doing his adultery thing, and so Emma would say, Joseph, you're not doing this, are you? No, I'm not doing John C. Bennett adultery. He wasn't admitting to doing his own polygamy. And Emma believed him, and these denials went on. And then in May, she finally accepts, gives him four wives, and the first night that after the sealing of one of them, Joseph beds with one of the plural wives, Emily, I think it was, Partridge, and then the next morning, Emma's saying, we're not doing this again. This is not happening anymore. And from that point on, she did not allow them to be together, according to Emily. And then a few weeks later, she throws Emily and Eliza Partridge out of the house, and they have to find other living space. And then she seems to have a period where she repents a little bit, feels bad, and she allows, I believe, one more, Melissa Lott, to be married to Joseph. She's not there, but she allows it according to one account. I think it's probably true, but then after Melissa Lott, there were no more plural marriages for Joseph Smith, and I believe that he had agreed not to do it anymore, or she was going to divorce, and she threatened divorce, I think, on several occasions. But I just feel bad for her. What an awful place, and anybody who wants to judge her, don't do it.
You remember these two questions right here, and then our time will be up.
You mentioned that Brigham Young said polyandry is not allowed or not a part of the gospel, and yet he took Ziba as a plural wife and basically disinherited Henry Jacobs, her legal husband, I guess. So that is one part of my question. Second part. You're discrediting Sarah Pratt bothers me a little bit. Everything that I've read about her testimony would seem to be quite credible. So just those two questions.
You know, you can read the Zina Huntington Jacobs Young account a number of different ways. Zina said on two occasions it was not a happy marriage. And there's good evidence that Henry Jacobs was a difficult person to live with. My guess is even though she had children with him, he was not an easy husband to be with. She was happy to get away from him at the first chance that she had. And Brigham Young at that point would have just said, I grant you a divorce, and it would have been over civilly. Maybe there was still a marriage on the books, but it was not a polyandrous sexual thing at all. There may have been a legal marriage on the books still with Henry, but as far as any practical standard, there wouldn't have been anything there. And as far as Sarah Pratt, I believe, and in the way I see it, was that she was involved sexually with John C. Bennett early in 1841. She was excommunicated for adultery in 1842 and was reinstated, you know, later. But she's not the kind of woman that I think most of the plural wives would have been confiding in Nauvoo, even though she claimed that level of knowledge. And then, of course, later she became an avid anti-Mormon and pushed all of her children but one out of the church. So I don't think she was going to be sympathetic to the cause. That doesn't mean that what she says isn't accurate. But she's clearly highly biased to tell a different story. And we do have some affidavits and things that put her in bed with Bennett, literally. So,
she excommunicated in 1842. What part of that year?
It was in the summer. And she was reinstated in January of 43. With her husband. Her husband wasn't excommunicated for adultery. It was just Sarah was for adultery.
Okay,
same time. Sorry.
No, that's all right.
I wonder if we're related. My great-grandfather was Charles Henry Hales from Spanish Fork.
You're my cousin.
Hey, cuz.
I got other questions. Oliver Cowdery was supposed to have seen Joan Smith in bed with another woman in Kirtland around 1831. And Eliza R. Snow was supposed to be pregnant, and Emma threw her down the stairs, and she was freaked out. And the other thing is Joseph Smith sent missionaries to the Indians, saying to them, you're supposed to marry the Indians so they can become a white, delightful people. And they said, well, how can we do that? We're already married.
Right. In 1861, W.W. Phelps recounted his recollection of a scripture allegedly given in 1831 that they were supposed to take wives of the Lamanites, which would have required polygamy. But there's no indication that there was any polygamy there. Your story about Joseph being in bed with another woman in 1831, I've never heard that before. So if you've got any evidence on that, I'd love to see it or hear it, because that's a new one. So. Well, that would have been 30 later, probably. Even the earliest, well, yeah, I believe that was late 35, 36. But Fanny Alger wasn't even there in 31, frankly.
What about Emma being pregnant?
Eliza being pregnant? Eliza R. Snow, there are lots of contradictions in that account. I've had a gynecologist look at it, and he sees lots of problems with it, too. I think it's folklore. That's my take on it, so.
Well, this is such a stimulating subject, we probably never get to the bottom of all of it. But one quick comment before we applaud to Brian here. You mentioned that, I think, Agnes, somebody went out to the West Coast and ran into David and Alexander Smith and told the sons that she had been married to their father, and they looked shocked. I think the most common theory about why David Hiram Smith ended up in a mental institution, I think Val Avery gives evidence for this, I don't think she necessarily... I think we know for sure, was that David Hiram Smith was so shocked at the evidence he ran into about his father, and consider the fact his mother has denied that there was polygamy going on, his older brother is heading the church, and they're taking a harder and harder stand on the notion that Joseph wasn't a polygamist. He's become a member of the First Presidency of that church, of his older brothers and his mother. It would have been, you know, really overwhelming, and possibly his mental illness came out of that dilemma. Anyway, thanks very much, Brian, for a very good question.